Welcome to the Food Junkies Recovery Story Podcast. Here we aim to provide you with the experience, strength, and hope of everyday people actively working on their recovery from food addiction. I hope to inspire you and increase your awareness about recovery from food addiction. Here we will talk about personal stories of recovery and the many ways to live in recovery. We will focus on the various solutions so that you can choose the best option for yourself. I want to encourage you to thrive rather than just survive. So stay positive, make changes for yourself, tell others about your changes, and our message of hope will spread. Okay, food junkies. Oh, she's already laughing, guys. I'm trying to introduce my sister who I'm interviewing today, and she's already started laughing. So this might not go that great. But anyways, Katie is here with me today, and she is my younger sister and is in recovery. And so I'm getting the awesome opportunity to interview her today. So welcome, Katie, to the show.
Thank you. Sorry, when we get together, sometimes we laugh a lot. And anyway, it just was a little comical for me. So sorry.
And the other thing you guys can't see is we're dressed like the Bobbsey twins. And she came over to my house today to record. So we did not plan this, but we do look like the Bobbsey twins. So this should be funny, hilarious, enlightening. I don't know all the things. I know most of what she's going to answer. So I'm looking to see if there's anything new that she could say. So we'll find out. So we're just going to start off with Katie and tell me about your personal story and how you got into recovery. However, you can jump in at any place that you want. You can start wherever you want. Just kind of give us whatever information you want to share with us.
Okay. Well, I think the easiest thing to start with would be when I started with my first addiction, right? So my first addiction is actually not food. So I started using like drugs and alcohol in my early teenage years. And I used those forever and ever. But I would say that I was a functional drug addict. I would never have labeled myself as an alcoholic, but I definitely did drink, and I would binge drink just because I was with friends and that was the thing to do, right? But definitely drugs, and it runs the gamut of a whole bunch of them, right? So I did that all through my teenage years, college, early 20s, late 20s. And then when I got, and I smoked too, I smoked cigarettes. So when I got pregnant with my daughter in my early 30s, of course, couldn't do any of that anymore. And I was fine for a while, but then I was a single parent. So, you know, raising my daughter on my own, that kind of kept me busy for a long time. But I guess when she was around 4 or 5, you know, life just started kind of catching up with me a little bit. I think food came into the scene about then, completely functional. And it wasn't out of control. But then one day, and the brilliant move that I had, I was like, you know, I think I'm just going to start smoking again. That was brilliant. And I didn't drink really. I drank like occasion, like when I was out with people, but I didn't drink at home ever because I was the only adult there. And she was a child, and I didn't want to be under the influence and like a fire in the house. And I'm the only one to save everyone. And, you know, I didn't want to be intoxicated, but then I started drinking at home a little bit more. Then I started ordering pills off the internet. And then that kind of snowballed, right? You know, again, functional for a long time. And then I quit my high paying corporate job and decided to go to nursing school. I think I had a little bit of a midlife crisis, and nursing school was very stressful. My parents moved into my home with me. That was, different. That was stressful because I didn't really have relationship skills. I didn't find this out until much later when I was in therapy that I had used drugs and alcohol and cigarettes and, you know, everything to not deal with relationships. So like I had the emotional maturity of, you know, a 10-year-old. So having my parents live with me and raising a small child, there's a lot going on there, right? And that's a lot of relationships. And, you know, my parents raised us, our parents raised us. And, you know, I don't know that they taught us what they knew, right? And did they know how to have these great relationships. No. So needless to say, we had three generations of dysfunctional people living under the same roof. It didn't go that great many, many times. So all that to say, when I got into nursing, that was stressful in itself. And that's when the food really took off. Like, if I look back at pictures, I see me in scrubs and I'm like, ooh, you look a little full in the face there, just the puffiness, you know? And that's when the pills really took off too. And so when I eventually went into rehab as part of being a licensed medical professional, I had to go into rehab to protect my nursing license. And so when I went into rehab, I used food. I remember being in rehab, right? You have it, and everybody smoked. And I was like, no, I'm absolutely, I'd already quit smoking like a third time by then. And I refused to smoke again. I said, no way. Y'all go smoke. I just can't do it. Cause if I smoke again, like I just can't quit again. So, but I remember, you know, we got three meals a day and I remember being excited to go to the cafeteria. I was going to get as much food and beverage as possible. And so then the food really, really, really just took off for me. And it's so funny, as you learn later, we learned about cheese and how it sits on the opiate receptors too. I remember coming home from rehab and all I wanted to eat was cheese quesadillas with sour cream on it, which was not a thing I ate before. And I never understood it. And I think it was just my body like trying to compensate, you know, and figure out how can we still get the things that, you know, we're used to in this new environment. So anyway, I know this is a long, how long do you have for this answer? Sir, I'm going to make it much faster. So anyway,
you don't have to make it any faster. Yes, you can talk as long as you want to, and it's all good information. So you just keep sharing.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. So after rehab, no drugs, no alcohol, no cigarettes, food. Food was the thing I had. And so, you know, I'm part of a nurse support group as part of protecting my license that I have to go. It's mandated by the state of Georgia. And, you know, I found sobriety there, but I don't know if I found a little bit of recovery, you know, because we do group work in there, right? And it's led by people who have many, many years of sobriety. And so I learned a lot of things there, but I think a lot of times, you know, it was white knuckling it. And I'm drug tested. I mean, that's a good way to stay sober. You know, like you don't have a job if you test positive. There's a good accountability there. So like it's forced on me. It's not like a choice, which drives behavior, I feel like. So anyway, the food, we got out of control, gained a lot of weight, really, really a lot of weight, you know, and just really uncomfortable. And I mean, the food noise all day, every day, just I'm eating a meal and thinking about my next meal at the same time. It just was, and all the thoughts, it just was crazy. And isolation, it's just like opiate, you know, it's just the same addiction the food was that the pills were. And so my daughter was getting older and she had some struggles too, you know, in her early teenage years. And this is after I have sobriety and stuff. And I can kind of see, I mean, I moved out when I was 18 and it was just me and her. It's just been me and her forever. I've always been a single parent. It's always just been the two of us. And I knew, I was like, she's going to move out when she's 18. And what the hell are you going to do? Because this is all you do is you, your daughter, and work. That's it. You know, and you're already not doing that great. I mean, that's what my internal voice was telling me. And I knew, I was like, you've got to get a life, right? And then, so I tried to lose weight. I tried to moderate, like it just didn't work, but I didn't know that there was food addiction, which is crazy because I should have known, right? I should have known it was an addiction because it was the same voice for food that it was for pills. Like, why didn't my mind put that together? I don't know. So the new GLP-1 medications came out. This is what, 2 years ago? So, well, they've been around forever, but for weight loss. And I said, I'm willing to try anything at this point in time. And I got a coupon for it. It's $25 a month. So yeah, I mean, of course. And it was Wegovy and it worked like a champ. It worked so well. This is 2021. Oh, because like after 2020 and being in lockdown, yeah, I put on a whole bunch of other weight then too. So I did the Wegovy for like 4, 5, 6 months, something like that. And I lost like 30 or 40 pounds because that's what it does, right? Now, did I modify like on purpose, like what I was eating or anything? No, I just did what the medication does. You know, it makes you eat less and you don't crave things as much, right? So, but I still ate the same things, you know, I was still eating fast food and cookies and whatever, just much less of it and less often, I guess. But then I got really sick with COVID and like really sick. I was in the hospital and well, you know, but for the listeners, you know, they didn't think I was going to make it. It was not good. And we think that probably a lot of it had to do with my body habitus. You know, I was so large that I really couldn't take deep breaths in. So my lungs weren't working great anyway. And that just kicked me in the butt. Right. So when I got out of the hospital, I couldn't go back on the Wegovy, like the coupon had expired or something. I tried to moderate again and it just didn't work. And so I then put back on that weight, probably a little bit more. And then the new medication Mounjaro came out and I was able to get a coupon for that. Now this whole time, CJ's in sweet sobriety and she's, you know, messaging me and our other sister, Donna, and, you know, Marco Polo's and text messages and conversations. And she's talking about food addiction. And I'm like, you just need to shut up. You are so annoying. Oh my gosh. Because I was like, if you had it all figured out, just tell me then. Because like every week you'd say, oh, listen to this podcast. You need to do this or read this book. This is, you need to take this supplement or you should eat this way. This is da 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 da. And I'm like, you know what, when you get the magic, you know, thing, the formula, just tell me then. In the meantime, I'm done. I don't want to hear anymore. And we talk about you behind your back, me and Donna.
Really?
And I'm an angry elf. Well, I was. And so she was much nicer than me. I was very mean. So I'm sorry. Anyway, so when I started the Mounjaro, I knew that I couldn't do it like I did the Wegovy. I was like, Katie, you have got to get, because I knew that the food addiction was true. I didn't want to agree with you, but I knew it was true. And I knew I had to do it differently. I had to change the way I was eating. And I looked at it as a tool like they would use in rehab. Like they use naltrexone as a medication they use for people who are opiate addicts, you know, coming off, right? There's other like tools out there like that. And that's what I looked at it as. This is a tool to help you get sober from food, but you're not going to stay on this medication for the rest of your life. You know, you're going to have to come off of it, right? And so let's make a plan for that. So I started the Mounjaro November 11th, 2022. And on December 10th was my first sweet sobriety meeting. And that I really feel like is when my recovery started, was then.
Well, with that being said, when you went to your first meeting in recovery, what did you think it was going to be like? And what was it actually like?
Well, because I'm in that nurse support group and I've done AA meetings and, I don't even know what the
OA.
Yeah, but it's not over.
No, it's not OA. I know what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
like I just can't remember it now.
Right.
It's not like Drug Users Anonymous. I don't know what it is. Anyway, I've been to 12-step meetings. Yeah. I've been to plenty of 12-step meetings. They never really worked for me. I mean, in a pinch, for sure. Mm-hmm. But like, it wasn't my gig.
You weren't getting recovery.
Yes.
I understand.
But in my nurse support group, it's similar to Sweet Sobriety, but I will say Sweet Sobriety takes a little bit further with two things that I can think of off the top of my head. The group coaching. I mean, we learn a lot. They teach us so many things. I've never been in that kind of environment where I'm getting that kind of teaching. Maybe in rehab, but I mean, in rehab, you're just like hanging on for dear life. Like, honestly, I don't remember anything from rehab except for the cafeteria. And then we have, you know, the different classes that you can sign up for outside of the group coaching. So, and that's another environment to learn. So I can't remember. I think like the first month that I was in, I took foundations, right? Okay. Yeah. I was like, I feel like I took a class because after foundations, I just signed up for every class they offered because I learned so much and I was just absorbing it and I felt better. You know, and it kept me busy, honestly. That kept me busy, which was good. I needed that too.
Right. Okay. All right. So what does the word recovery mean to you? How would you define it? How do you think of recovery? I think a lot of people have a misconception about recovery. And so maybe if you tell them what you think about it, you might help the listener out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I think about recovery from an illness, right, when you're on a journey to better health. So that's how I think of recovery. And when Molly and Clarissa talk about, you know, just because you're abstinent doesn't mean you're not in recovery. And just because, or wait a minute, did I say that right?
Just because you're abstinent doesn't mean you're in recovery.
That's right.
And just because you're in recovery doesn't mean you're abstinent.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for that. So I kind of feel like it's the same thing. Recovery to me is a journey to a more healthy life. And I think I'll be on this journey for the rest of my life. That is my plan. I always want to be moving forward to better health, better physical health, better health with my relationships with others, a better relationship with myself, better mental health, if I didn't say that already, you know, that kind of thing. So that's what recovery is for me, is just making myself like a better person and a better child of God in the world every day. And it's so much fun.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Who has been your biggest influence in your recovery journey?
My big sister, CJ, for sure.
I'm sure there's others.
There are, but I would say you're at the top. I mean, hands down, the others pale in comparison, but for sure, Molly and Clarissa. I jihad with both of them so well, and I just love them to death. Molly is my personal coach. Just because, you know, everybody has that one person that they kind of, you know, just, I like to say the word jihad with, but I mean, in a pinch, I feel like I could set up an appointment with Clarissa and she would really, really help me too. So other than that, I mean, those are my three main ones. So, I have a smaller recovery world than some of the other folks, but it works for me where I am now.
That's the important part. How did you overcome obstacles and setbacks and while you've been doing recovery work?
Yeah, well, again, it's a journey, right? So if I think about early recovery, you know, there would be times where I would falter and go off my eating plan and I would come on the group and I would talk about it. And, you know, it was nice because they gave you some grace there when you couldn't give it to yourself, to help you kind of put your foot back forward again and keep moving forward. But nowadays when I like last night, for sure, yesterday was a very stressful day for me. There was some stuff going on at work and then personal stuff at night. And like at the end of the day, the food chatter was just ridiculous. And I used two different tools last night. One of them is my go-to that I usually use, which is, how does tomorrow, Katie, want to feel about the decisions you're going to make today? You know, so having the food in the moment, it's so fleeting. I mean, it goes fast. I know because I've done it several times, right? But then the way you feel the next after that, the next day, that just lingers, right? So, you know, I really kind of try to put it in that kind of context. You know, do I want that fleeting thing to deal with this lingering feeling? No. And how about, so that's the negative, but then the flip side, how good will I feel about myself that I didn't choose to use food to cope with these other things, right? And then the other thing I used was my personal relationship with God. I just asked for help. I was like, I really need your strength right now because I just don't have it today. And that got me through the evening. So the future, Katie, that is my drop to go to. But sometimes you can't pull that tool. Like you forget that you have those tools. So I call someone or I text someone. And sometimes I fail, but I just pick myself up and just keep going.
And get back on that horse and keep riding. That's great. Okay. So what, are there some alternative or any complementary approaches that you found helpful in your recovery or tools that you've used? I mean, you're talking a few minutes about the tools, but maybe some treatments or therapies or anything like that that you've used.
I think that the things that I do, I listen to podcasts and, to help me learn and develop and grow and think about other things, right? I'm strengthening my relationship with God, and I use that as a tool. I go to at least, 3 meetings a week. And if it's a rough week, sometimes I need 6. I usually don't go to the free meetings, but I will go to the free meeting. When I need a meeting, I'm going to go to the free meeting. And people are going to be like, who is this girl? I've never seen her before in my life, you know? And I don't read a lot of books because I just cannot sit down to read. So I have to listen to them now, which I swore I would never do, but I have to now because I'm just too busy. Like I listen to them in the car because I drive a lot for work. What was the question? Sorry.
And therapies, tools that you use, treatments that you have found effective for your recovery.
For me, it's just learning, you know, and building relationships. So group coaching, the monthly, I usually will sign up for the monthly, whatever we're learning, as long as it, you know, it's something I'm interested
in. What are some of those monthly classes that you took that you found beneficial?
That's fair. The codependency one, that was huge. I loved that one. Foundations. Right now we're doing internal family systems. The coping mechanism one, that was amazing. God, I got a really crappy
The perfectionist.
Oh, yeah.
That one. That was a good one.
Yeah. So I've signed up every single month, except I didn't do the befriending your body because I was already signed up to do foundations again, because foundations was amazing when I first started.
It's a game changer.
It is. I highly recommend it to everyone. And even if there's not a foundations class going on, you could go through the modules at a self pace, listen to the recordings, get a lot out of it. And then when they offer it again, you already, because you purchased it, like you can take it live and in real time again. And I'm taking it again because where I am on my journey now is different than where I was then. And it is the foundation for recovery, right? So I feel like everyone could get so much from it. And then you can take it again, you know, at no extra charge, right? Because you've already purchased it. So I don't think this is going to be the last time I do foundations, honestly. I mean, I probably do it again next year because every year you're in a different place. And so you get a little bit different information from it that you can utilize in your daily life later. So.
Okay. Well, you actually touched on this a little bit when you said that you use books. Are there any books that you have found that have helped your recovery?
Yes. I am listening to Metabolical by Dr. Ludwig.
Gosh, now you've
I know. Sorry.
I know it. Just keep talking. I'll come back with it.
Okay. Thank you. I love how I'm really just depending on her to complete this interview. Thank God you're here. And then Chris Van Tulliken, Ultra Processed People. Oh my gosh. I love that book. That book is amazing. I would highly recommend that. And then I like the one by Russell Brand. I cannot remember the Russell Brand book.
I'm drawing a blank.
And then of course it all starts with Dr. Tarwin's book, Food Junkies. I mean, you pretty much that is the game changer. That and Foundations. If you need two things to start off with, those would be the two for sure.
Those are good ones. I mean, Food Junkies was definitely a game changer for me. The one that I read, and I've mentioned it before on the podcast before, was Better Than Before with Gretchen Rubin. That's when I found out the difference between people who are moderators and people who do better with abstinence. And when I found out that actually is something that is in you, that you're blueprinted that way, I was like, oh, well, I already knew because I had already given up sodas by then. It's before I knew about food addiction. And so that was a game changer for me. What was the book? Metabolical by Dr. Lustig.
Lustig. That's it. I knew I was saying it wrong. Yeah. I haven't finished it yet. I'm loving it. Well, you know, the thing about it is he does some science in there, but not too sciencey. Although sometimes it's a little sciencey, but I'm a nurse. So of course I like that, but I love and Dr. Van Tulliken and Ultra Processed People. He does the sociological, historical, geographical elements to it too, so that you have a full understanding on how processed food came about, because it actually came about as a positive way to impact society, right? Mm. It's not that way now, but I don't know. And I don't like the word ultra processed. I just prefer process. I feel like people respond negatively when you say, oh, well, I don't eat ultra processed food. They just look at you like you've got two horns and an eyeball in the middle of your forehead. I mean, if you just say processed food, I feel like it doesn't have so much of a weird statement to it. They're like, oh, processed food. Yeah. I mean, processed food is bad.
Right.
Yeah, but ultra processed, they just think you're ultra crazy. I don't know.
I find that when I talk to people and I say, you know, some dairy is an inflammatory. And also we talked about the cheese, that it hits the same opioid receptors in the brain. And when I tell people dairy's not great for you, and I'm not even kidding. 99% of the time they come back with, I don't eat that much dairy. And I'm like, oh, okay. So you don't eat cheese? Oh, cheese? And I'm like, I'm going to just start saying cheese hits the receptor instead of dairy, because
But cheese is the worst offender out of all of them.
Yes, because it's spun down so much that it's that much more potent.
I think you should say cheese because it is the worst offender.
Yes, and it's also very much an inflammatory. So if you have any of the inflammatory health problems, you're exacerbating the problem. Not that you have to take care of everything all at the same time. I'm just saying you just need to be aware of it.
Yeah. So. Speaking of cheese, when I was in the food, my absolute favorite food to eat was a cheese Danish. And that, of course, makes complete sense. Cheese, sugar, and flour all together wrapped up in a nice little inflammatory
bun.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. What have you gained significant lessons or insights in the recovery process that you wish you'd have known earlier? Kind of touching on a little bit, but anything that really sticks out, like, wow, I wish I, because now you've been doing this for a while, something that's really, you're like, God, I wish I'd have figured that out sooner.
Well, I think the biggest thing, and I've talked about it in our group coaching a couple of times, and now I still bring it up so that, you know, people that are newer in the group, you know, have some hope, although I don't know that I would have heard it early on, but whatever. I was in prison. I had made myself a prisoner in my own mind and my own body by these addictions, right? And when I hear people in early recovery, they talk about, and I've probably said it too, how am I going to be fun at a party if I can't have cake? You know, and in my other recovery rooms, how can I be fun with my friends if I can't do drugs or drink alcohol or whatever, right? You're like, I have to give up this thing. But now I realize I actually was a prisoner shackled down by those substances. And now I'm actually free and I'm so much more fun. I'm so much more fun to be around. I like being around myself, you know, I'm just so much happier. And so there's a freedom that I never even knew it was possible. I didn't even know it was a thing because I didn't realize I was in prison. So I didn't realize it until I was out of it that I was in prison. So that would be the one thing that I wish I could have understood earlier is that I was in prison. And maybe I would have wanted to get out sooner. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. That's a really good point. Well, can you give us an idea of what life was like before you found recovery and what your life is like now that you have been in recovery for a while?
So before I found recovery, I would get angry very, very easily. Things would make me mad or I'd get sad or frustrated, you know, the negative emotions. And I was constantly, my relationships were mostly broken. I'm a good mom. I've always been a good mom, but you know, did I raise my child in the healthiest relationship model? No, I definitely didn't, but I didn't know any better and that's okay. I mean, I'm not going to beat myself up about that now. I can do better now and I do better now. And that's fantastic. But I was constantly thinking about food. Like I said earlier, like I would think of going to work. I'd think about, okay, I got to go get this food from this fast food. Right. And I would go get it and I'd be sitting there eating it. And I'd be thinking about what am I going to have for lunch? Like, what's my big thing for lunch? So, and then when I was driving home from work at night or from a meeting or whatever, you know, it's like, what sweet treat are you going to get? You know, and I had all these different places to go and it was just constantly about food. And I didn't cope with anything because it was all covered with food. So when life happens, which it does, right? Like relationships are tested, work doesn't go your way, money situations don't go your way, you get sick. I mean, you know, life. My first response was food and anger. So I was just like an angry food addict. Wasn't very much fun. I mean, there were moments of joy in there with family members and stuff, but you know, on the day to day, and if you would have asked me then, I would have been like, yes, I'm happy. No, I'm not depressed. I'm fine. I don't know what you're talking about. Right. So, now that I'm in recovery, first of all, the food noise isn't like that. I mean, there's still food noise, you know, I still have to, you know, deal with those. We talked about that, but not like constant throughout the day. And life is just like so much easier because my mind is free to think about other things. And I enjoy my relationships better. I enjoy time with myself better. I'm not so critical on myself. Me and my daughter have just some really cool conversations. And she sees the change in me. And she's told me several times how proud of me that she is, you know, which is awesome when your kid says that to you. And, you know, life is just easier. It's lighter. It's brighter. I can deal with things as they come. Like I mentioned yesterday, some pretty stressful stuff happened at work. And I was with my women's group last night. And at the end, we were talking about what do we have praise for and what do we need prayers for? And I asked for a couple of prayers, but I said, you know, I really have to praise this, because if this day had happened to me 2 years ago, I would still be just completely filled with anger. Now, I am having to process some stuff right now, but like, I'm not angry. I'm actually really calm. There's some upsetting things going on and some stress I'm having to deal with, but relatively I'm calm. And I had such a deep gratitude at that moment, you know, praise that I'm in the place that I am now, that I can have some peace and deal with things as they come along. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it's great. Excuse me. What daily activities do you have, and hobbies or anything like that? What are you doing anything different now that you've been in recovery for a while?
Lots of things differently, for sure. So a lot of times at work, because my work can be pretty stressful, I'll go for a quick walk during lunch. And it's not for exercise. I call it my mental health walk. And they laugh at me at work. They're like, oh, are you going to go get some exercise down? And I'm like, oh, no. This is a mental health walk. I just need like some sun on my body and my legs to move under me. And I'm going to put in a podcast and I'll be back in 30 minutes, you know, kind of thing. So I do that. Thank you, Molly, for making me do that. I appreciate you so much. Excuse me. I'm involved in the church. In my church, that I do a women's group on Monday nights, and I volunteer at least every other Sunday with my church. I do both, like greeting first time people who have come to the church, but then also I'm on the medical response team. So because I'm a nurse, you know, luckily I haven't gotten any calls, knock on wood. So I like that. And then, you know, every once in a while they have like a youth camp and they need nurses for that. And there's not a ton of nurses. So, you know, I volunteer to go for those. And those can't, I have to be careful about which ones I go to now, though, because our church does like to serve like a lot of red food. So I like the camps that are away out in nature because I can be away from the food. But if they're like just in one building, maybe that's not the camp for me. And then, you know, I still go to my nurse support meeting, and I do take time to myself. So, you know, during the week, I just kind of, after work, I mean, I have a small dog at home, so I take care of him. I'm an introvert. I know I sound like an extrovert. I'm actually not. I'm an introvert. So, you know, if I think about Wednesdays and Thursday nights, that's kind of just me regrouping, because Monday and between work those days, which I really pour out a lot of myself at work, I'm an educator. So I'm constantly like giving up, taking away from my cup to fill up other people as an educator. And then Monday and Tuesday nights, you know, I'm out of the house. So Wednesday and Thursday, yeah, you can find me at home chilling, or I might go to the movies, you know, during the week or something like that. But I do like my sleep. I've always liked my sleep, but I know how important it is to, you know, just my daily life. So I, you know, like to keep myself set up for success. And then on the weekends, I might go for, now over the winter, I haven't, because I just cannot deal with the cold. I hate being cold now. But like, we'll go for a hike or to the movies, or I'll play cards. And I'm pointing to you for all of those. I do these things with her a lot. But I'll invite my daughter, you know, I might go up and visit her in Athens, which is only like an hour away, you know, those kind of things. So
you mentioned red foods. For our listeners who don't know what you mean by that, could you explain what you mean by red foods?
Yeah, red foods are just foods that light up my brain like a Christmas tree. So donuts, cake, you know, those kind of things.
It sounds like a stoplight system. Maybe you could explain all the colors.
Sorry, you're leading the witness. So yes, yeah, so there's red, yellow, green. Green are the things that you could eat over and over again. They're healthy for you. They're on your food plan, whatever your food plan is. And your food plan may change over time as well. At least mine has. And then yellow foods are foods that, you know, if you're not in the right frame of mind, a yellow food could lead to a red food. But yellow foods can also be foods that you can allow on occasion, at least for me. These are all just my personal opinion. And then red foods are things that are no. So like yellow foods for me are things like lattes, right? With I don't really want to have a latte every day. That would be too much for me. A latte, you know, once or twice a week. And these aren't like lattes filled with sugar. I'm talking about espresso with steamed milk, right? But red foods are sugar-laden foods or flour foods, processed food. But I mean, once I said flour and sugar, that's processed food. I mean, mm-hmm. I can't think of many processed foods, I'm sure there are, that don't have either flour, sugar, or some type of a sugar alternative.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of sugar alternatives, how has that changed? What's your recovery like with sugar alternatives?
Tie into another question that I've heard you ask before. So we'll just go ahead and get it all in one. What's something that you're working on now?
Okay.
So I know Splenda is not good for me. I know it is not good for me. And I know Stevia is a better alternative, but I feel like Stevia is not great for me either. And I know sugar isn't, and Equal and monk fruit and like all the things, right? Like in the end, I would ultimately not want to use any of them. Am I there right now? No. I still use about 2 to 3 Splenda a day. It's in my hot tea at night. But I am doing better. It used to be 2 Splenda. Now it's 1 Splenda and 1 Stevia. I can't say I'm actively working on it. Right now, I'm kind of just pretending like that's not a thing in my life, but I'm going to have to address it.
Okay.
But it's not the worst thing in the world. So okay. I'm giving myself some grace too.
How do you navigate social situations now that you're in recovery? Or how did you handle those in the beginning? You said you're the church. We go to the same church. They have a lot of red foods there and those type of things. How do you handle those situations now?
Yeah, well, I think about what my future, what tomorrow, Katie, how does she want to feel about the day? That's usually my go-to. But like the last church event where I was the nurse, I had done several events where I was the nurse, right? But this was the only time that they changed the event at the last minute. It was supposed to be like in the mountains. And then there was something wrong there and they changed it. And it was just a 1-day event, like at the church. Literally, y'all, I mean, if they walked by with one more piece of whatever, it was just nonstop all day, food, food, food. It was crazy. I never had anticipated that. And where they had me set up medically was by, I'm not even kidding, a mound of chocolate chip cookies. I was like, I can't sit next to that. Like, you know, I'd rather you put a pile of cocaine next to me. Honestly, that would be easier to deal with. So I faltered that day. I got on a group meeting and I moved. I even moved where I was. I was like, medical's not here anymore. I'm making a management decision. Medical's over there next to like the photography booth. But by the end of the day, I had been around it too much. And I got on the group the next day. I talked about it. And that's when I made a decision. So I learned something, right? I didn't beat myself up about it. No, old Katie would have, but I didn't beat myself up about it. And I know I am not going to volunteer for events that are just in one building. That's not going to work for me. I need the events that I can move around and be out in nature and that works. So I forgot what the question was that you asked. Sorry.
I asked you how you handle situations. And I forgot. No, I haven't forgotten the question. The social situations.
And then like birthdays and stuff. I just make sure like if we have a birthday over at your house, sometimes I will choose a planned use and I make a plan for how I'm going to have a red food and then move on. Other times I choose not to, and maybe I'll bring my own like berries or something, because I eat blueberries, raspberries, and strawberries and blackberries. So maybe I'll just bring some berries with me and have that. Or sometimes, I mean, a hot peppermint tea, of course, with a stevia and a Splenda in it, is a good treat for me too. So I just plan my, like, my treats.
Do you have social situations maybe through work or something where there's drinking or anything like that where you have to plan around that?
Yeah, I do. So I've had several of those events and they're paid for and other people are drinking and eating foods that I choose not to. And, you know, luckily with my work people, they're mostly other nurses too, or even if they're not nurses, I work for an aesthetics company. So living a healthy lifestyle, most people are very supportive of it. So when I say, you know, if they ask me, I want a cocktail, no, thank you. I don't drink. And they don't say anything else about it. So I have a pretty supportive system when it's like that. And when it comes to dessert, you know, I'll order some berries or a hot tea and, you know, they're very supportive of it. So I'm very grateful, to work in an environment like that where I don't have to deal with that kind of stuff.
Awesome. Okay. Well, how important is having a support system in your recovery? We've touched on the group coaching and stuff like that, but how important is your recovery group, friends, family, support system? What does that look like?
I just don't think I could do it without it, right? Because addiction is so isolating. And most addicts don't get sober or in recovery without help. Like if we could all do things by ourselves, we would do it, right? We wouldn't need these communities. But I love that lab that they did, that study with the mice, right? Where the mouse was all by itself and it could have like the sugar water, right? And then, so the mouse got addicted to the sugar water, but then they gave like Mouse City with other mice and there was things to play with and everything on the other side. So then the mouse had the choice, either I can have the sugar water that I love, 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 or I can go be with these other mice, but not have the sugar water. The mouse chose the community because the mouse was happier with that. And to me, it's the same thing. Addiction is so isolating. And once you find your community, that's when you can really grow and truly start recovering and living a happier, healthier life. So I think I can't imagine a situation where I could have done it without my community.
That's awesome. How do you continue to prioritize your recovery in your daily life?
It's number one thing. So, you know, when life kind of is trying to kick me in the teeth, you know, I think about something came up at work yesterday where they want me to take some new territories, like in Missouri, which is not close. Right. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to think, you know, my workaholic person. So I am still working on that addiction too, mm-hmm. by the way, really wants to say yes, you know, and how can I negotiate a pay raise? You know, that's what I'm thinking. Right. But actually that wasn't my first thought. My first thought is, well, let's think about what your life looks like with the travel, that travel on top of the travel that you do and how you manage your daily life. And I don't see that I am going to be able to accept that, right? It's going to interrupt where I am on my recovery journey. And what's important to me now? What's important to me now is my health, my volunteering, everything that I've talked about that I do on a daily is most important to me now. And adding in that travel, I'm just not going to be able to do it. And so my recovery, I'm going to use the word dictates, but I don't mean it like that. I mean, it's the most important thing to me, but only because it keeps me super happy and healthy and able to deal with things. And so it's the most important thing.
What does the future hold for you now that you've been in recovery?
So I've got some travel planned that I would have never done before. The first time that I was able to get on an airplane without using the seatbelt extender was pretty nice. And then it was the next airplane travel after that where I could actually pull the tray table down without it hitting my stomach. That was pretty awesome. So travel before was just so much work. It was just too hard. Like even going to the beach, right? We do a yearly beach vacation that I really look forward to, you know, but if I think about when I was still in the food and all the extra weight, like even getting up, preparing food, going to the beach, that was all just work. That was not fun, right? But now it is fun. I'm like, oh, we get to ride our bikes to the beach and lay out there all day and listen to the ocean. And I want to go there every day. And in fact, we usually stay much longer than we started off 7 days and then we're like, no, we need 10 days. And now we're like 14. And now it's like, well, do you think we could stay for a month? Right. So it's not work anymore. It's just a lot of joy and relaxation. So I'm really, really hoping that I get to go to London to what's the name of the convention?
It's a conference for food addiction.
Yes. I am planning on doing that. But I just have to get the time off from work, but I should be able to get that. So, and then next year, I think I'm going to go to Turkey. So I would have never done that before. So travel is the biggest thing for me. And like I said, just continuing with my recovery journey forever.
How has your relationship with your daughter or your family members, or how has that changed since you've been in recovery?
Well, I actually can say with the help of the feelings wheel, which by the way, get a feelings wheel, y'all. It's necessary. I'm able to express myself now. And before, I might not have been able to identify my emotions. And I still need help. The feelings will definitely comes into play. It helps me identify what I'm really feeling. But before, I was too scared to be vulnerable, to say how I really felt. So I kept a lot of things bottled in. So, I mean, you can't have a relationship without like some honesty about how you're feeling. So, you know, being able to be vulnerable and have the confidence to know that whatever they say back, you know, in your moment of vulnerability, it's not going to kill you. And you have the tools to feel the feelings that you're going to feel, you know, because it was all too scary before. Like, I can't have those feelings because I don't have any way to cope with them, right? So now I do. So, I mean, that like opened up my relationships with, you know, all of the people that I have relationships with, and especially my daughter. And I'm very honest with her about saying, look, I wasn't that great of a mom. Like, I mean, I took care of you, but I didn't teach you things and, you know, how to have relationships and stuff. And funny enough, like my daughter will call me out sometimes when I'm trying to manipulate her, because I still do it. You know, I still have to, and she'll say, oh, so you're just trying to get me to do this. And I get defensive and I'm like, I'm, you know, and I have to come back to her later and say, because I'm still learning, right? And I've come back to her. I'm like, you're absolutely right. You totally called me out on that, and I was wrong. And I don't know where you learned that from, because it wasn't for me. You know, but I appreciate you saying that, and I'm so proud of you. And it gives us moments to. She sees me learning, and I call myself out on it, and I apologize to her, and it's been really beautiful, actually.
That's awesome. We're wrapping it up. So I do have a signature question for you. And if your body or spirit could speak, what would it say about the changes that you have made on your journey?
So I definitely resonate with the spirit, right, thing, because I'm definitely a spiritual person. But I kind of, in my mind's eye, I have this little image of this little like yellow sunshine guy with arms and legs, right? And he is jumping up and down with joy, and his rays are just radiating out from him. And I think about him pouring into all those rays and good energy pouring into every cell of my body. And he's just like so, so happy that I found recovery. I found this group. Well, you showed me this group. Sorry. I'll go ahead and give you credit there. He's just like so happy and so grateful and so excited about, you know, where I am and where things are going. And so that's my little spirit sunshine guy.
Well, that sounds awesome. Is there anything else that you'd like the listeners to know that we didn't cover?
I can't think of anything. Right. No, I just thank you for having me today. I feel very honored. And it was great that we got to do it in person too.
Yes. Thanks for being here. I look forward to this episode coming out. Thanks, Katie. Thank you for joining me this week for Food Junkies Recovery Stories. Make sure you join our Facebook group, Sugar Free for Life Support Group. I'm Sweet Enough. Please subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in today's story, we would appreciate a ratings on iTunes. If you've been inspired by today's show and would like to be a guest, please reach out through the email provided in the show notes. If you have additional questions, CJ is a food addictions professional and works one-on-one with clients. You can find her email address and website in the show notes. Thank you for joining us.